All right, so we're going to continue on in our study of Acts, obviously. Now, before we get into the chapter, you can see here, obviously, the message and the theme is, of course, about the resurrected Christ. Now, last week we were talking about Paul and his ministry in Jerusalem and how initially when Paul now, Saul having now become a believer after all of the hostility and the hatred that he had shown towards the church of God, towards the believers, now he finds himself one of them, and yet they're unwilling to embrace him. And we also said that because he had become one of them, he is now ostracized from Judaism, from religion. And so he finds himself in this middle place. Those of Judaism don't want anything to do with him, and the Christian church doesn't want anything to do with him, simply out of fear, which we said was clearly and easily understandable. There's no reason that these guys shouldn't have been in great, like, well, you know, I don't know about this guy. And so Paul, for that brief period of time, sort of finds himself on an island. He's not wanted by anybody. As we said last week, he was sort of that social leper, not accepted by anyone. But as he was there in Jerusalem, we saw one individual pop up, a fellow by the name of Barnabas. Remember we talked about him? Son of encouragement, the son of consolation. One of these guys gifted with that incredible gift that just constantly lifts people up in the worst of circumstances. And though everybody else, including the leaders of the apostles, wouldn't have anything to do with him, Barnabas, for whatever reason, whether they knew each other, we talked about that before, or whether they didn't is irrelevant. Whatever the case, Barnabas brings him in and takes him to the home, and he listens to what Saul has to say. And Saul shares his testimony. And of course, Barnabas says, dude, we got to take, well, I don't know if he said dude, but you get the idea. He said, man, we got, I don't think he said man either. He said, Saul, we need to get you to the apostles. And so he brings them over there, and it would be Paul later, now in our current situation, Saul, but later Paul would write that during that period of time, when Barnabas took him, he didn't see any of the other apostles for whatever reason. They were out of town. Who knows why? Certainly they were out ministering the gospel. And so the only two that were there were Peter and James. And so Barnabas brings him to Peter and James. And of course, very key figures in the early church. You know, Peter is the apostle. James is not an apostle of Jesus Christ, but he is an apostle of the church at Jerusalem. And so this is the Lord's half-brother, remember. So he becomes the pastor of the church in Jerusalem. And so it's the leader of the church of Jerusalem and the recognized leader of the apostles in Peter. And it's these two guys that Barnabas brings him to. And we talked about how the testimony goes out once again, because now it's not just Saul's testimony, but the testimony of two witnesses, which everything was to be established by, because he now has Barnabas on his side. And these guys embrace him. And then we read that incredible, just short phrase that said, and he went in and out among them. In other words, they had accepted him and he had freedom to come and go as he pleased as he ministered. And as he ministered, we read that he was bold in his speech. And the Jews, they could not argue with what he was saying, as he had not been able to argue with Stephen at Stephen's death. And so all of a sudden, they can't deal with this guy. And so once again, the plot by the Hellenistic Jews, the Jews that were from Greece or from the surrounding area that spoke Greek as their primary language instead of Hebrew, still Jews, they just weren't Jews of Jerusalem. And so they come after him once again, and they threaten his life. And so the brethren take Paul. Remember, they didn't send him off in the sense of just, well, you need to leave town, Paul. They took him, and they took him over to the place called Caesarea. Remember that? The port city built by Herod in honor of Caesar. And from there, Paul sailed, and he went on up north. And it was at that point that we know that Paul tells us again in the book of Galatians that he spent about 3 years in Arabia. So Paul is now in Arabia, and since Paul is up there and no doubt ministering the gospel to the Lord Jesus Christ, Luke turns our attention back to Peter, because we've been looking at Paul for the last few weeks, and now we're going to once again refocus on Peter. Now, there's a reason for that. Something is about to take place in the church in a way that nothing like this had ever been seen leading up to that point. We're not going to get to that this week. That will be actually next week. But when we get to Acts chapter 10, and Peter's going into an Italian officer of the Roman army whose name was Cornelius. And Cornelius was a man of some means as well as obviously some authority. And when Peter goes and ministers to him, there's this massive shift in what is happening in the church. And now it's predominantly going to go to the Gentiles. We're still in Jerusalem right now. We're still doing these things. But these guys now are going to start going out. So what Luke is doing is finishing with Paul. Paul is now in Arabia. So he goes back to focus on Peter because he's lining us up. Now it's actually the Holy Spirit, not Luke. But the Spirit is lining us up to see how the Lord was working in and through the life of Peter. And it's very significant because that's what we're going to talk about today in preparation for the Cornelius incident. All right? So that's what's taking place here. All right? Now, remember the one last thing we said last week when Paul had departed and gone to Caesarea and then up north into areas that we would know today as Syria, parts of Iran, and so on and so forth. That's where he was out there ministering for that 3 years. During that period of time, now Peter is coming back on the scene, and there was a point to what I was just going to say, and it just went. So I have no idea what it was. I'll come back to it if it snaps too. No, I did not do any of that morphine Bob has. So what we're going to do is we're just going to. Oh, I know what I was saying. So the church after Paul was gone. See, you just kind of snap too. Oh yeah, I remember. What happened was because Paul had departed, the church had settled down. The persecution had died down. And remember, we read the verses just prior to where we're going to start reading. And there was peace in all of the churches. There was no threats of persecution at this time. And so the church was continuing to grow. Okay, and this is what's taking place. Notice verse 32 of chapter 9. Now. That's why the word now is so significant, because it's telling us when this event that we're about to read took place. And it took place after Paul had gone, the church, the persecution had settled down, and the church was multiplying rapidly. Now notice what's happening. Now it came to pass as Peter went through all the parts of the country. See, he's going now in great freedom. He could go and minister without worry about threats. Now, there's always threats, but we're talking about the kind of threats that they had experienced prior to this. No doubts there were still, you know, debates and all of that stuff, but those are not threats. That's to be expected. But he's going around, and he went through all the parts of that country that he also came down to the saints who dwelt in Lydda. Now, what's happening here is he's making a journey. Later, we're going to see some of these villages, and he's going up north into Galilee and Judea and Samaria and these other places. And what's happened is during this period of time, he's been in Jerusalem, and so he makes a journey out of Jerusalem. And what he's doing is he's following a road that would take him from Jerusalem to the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. And he's just going out there to minister the gospel. I'm sure at this juncture he had no idea of what the amazing things that God was about ready to do. He was just probably motivated by the Spirit who said, you know what? Just put one foot in front of the other, Peter. Leave Jerusalem for now and start heading towards the coast. Okay, so he's on this highway now, this coastal highway we would call it. And as he comes out of Jerusalem, the first place he would pass on this particular road was Emmaus. Now remember the city of Emmaus was where the two guys and Jesus had a discussion after the resurrection. Remember that? On the road to Emmaus. And then after Emmaus, the next town that you would come to is this town right here called Lydda. All right? And so notice what's happening here. And there he found a certain man named Aeneas who had been bedridden for 8 years and was paralyzed. So lo and behold, as Peter makes the journey and happens to stop into Lydda, lo and behold, there's this man who has been paralyzed for 8 years. So obviously, this was not a problem that this individual had since birth. It is something that has happened probably by means of an accident. Who knows? Maybe he'd fallen off a roof and he couldn't move now. You know, whatever the case may be, he's now paralyzed and has been that way for 8 years. And it simply means that he's paralyzed. He can't move. And so he's been laying on his bed all of that time. Now, notice that it just says a certain man. So as far as we know, Aeneas is not a believer. Because had he been a believer, Luke would have written, and he found a brother or part of the brethren or whatever, a disciple because we're going to see that in contrast to the next person we're going to talk about. So it appears at this juncture that this fella was probably not a believer. And as he goes through, whether Peter was led there, we're not told. There's no reason to try to assume what happened. But whatever the situation was, the Lord crossed these two guys' paths. And for Aeneas, it was pretty substantial, to say the least. Now, Ennius, like the next person we're going to talk about, were also, because of the area that they lived in, were Hellenistic Jews. So again, they were Jews whose first language was Greek, and they, in other words, they hadn't come from Jerusalem. And so it's all important. That's how you can tell with these names that are going on. So he'd been bedridden for 8 days, and he was paralyzed. And Peter said to him, and I love this. This is what you love about Peter. Peter, as we've always said, and we like to say this, and I mean, it's true, but I don't know. You know, I mean it in a good way, but Peter had a serious case of foot and mouth syndrome. He was always just speaking out. Now, at times, it wasn't the smart thing to do, or probably not the smart thing, but the best thing to do. But at this juncture, it appears to be. So where in one case we would fault Peter, so to speak, for just sort of blurting it out, this time, you got to give the guy credit. I love the attitude and that he just sort of just walks in there. I mean, I get this idea that however he comes across Ennius, he just sort of walks in and there the dude's laying there. And obviously the Lord has spoken to him and look at what and said, you know what? You won't get over there to that guy. And this is what you have to say. And Peter just comes up to him and says, Ennius, Jesus the Christ, heals you. Okay. How about, do you want to be healed? Can I pray for you? Can, you know, let's get your family together and talk about this? I mean, look at this. He just bowls in. Imagine if you're this dude laying on this mat and this big, huge dude comes in and goes, hey, Jesus Christ is healing you. Get up. Can you imagine? I mean, there's no evidence of a conversation taking place. You know, we want to build the faith of the person we minister to. Well, now let me share the gospel with you and, you know, sort of walk you through the gospel. And there's nothing wrong with that. But there were times when you just walk in and say, hey, you know what? Jesus is doing this in your life, so change. I think we ought to take a little more advantage of that, to tell you the truth. But I love this, what he does. Ennius, Jesus the Christ heals you. Now, what's really cool about this, you don't really get it in the English, but in the Greek, he literally says, Ennius, Jesus Christ is healing you. He's saying it's happening as I'm speaking to you. The Lord is healing you. Now, it isn't like we see in the movies where, oh, I'm wiggling a toe. Oh, I'm wiggling a foot. No, when the Lord does things, there's no process. It's a done deal. When he called Lazarus from the tomb, Lazarus, come forth, we don't read about Lazarus sort of just opening his eyes, looking around, and then sitting up. No, when Jesus calls, things happen immediately. He's the Lord Jesus Christ. So, Jesus, the Christ, is healing you now. There's an immediate, not only command, but there's going to be an immediate response. But the idea that I'm trying to drive home to you is that this is all taking place, from as far as we know, totally out of the blue. As I said, as Peter was entering into Lydda, I don't know whether he had any inclination that something like this was about to take place or didn't. We just don't know. But obviously, he was moving out to share the gospel, so he was being obedient to the Lord. And whether or not these guys' paths crossed because of the Lord's direction, well, obviously it was the Lord's direction, but I mean, you know, in other words, the circumstances that surrounded this. Obviously, the Lord is always in control, but we just don't know what those were. But I notice what he says. Jesus the Christ is healing you. Arise, make your bed. Now, where did Peter learn this from? Does anybody remember a certain incident in Gospels Mark chapter 2 where Jesus is teaching in a house and there are four guys who have a friend that they care very deeply about. And guess what? He's paralyzed too. And these four guys devise a scheme. They've heard of this Jesus of Nazareth. They don't know him. They may not even understand, but they've heard that he can heal, that he speaks with the power and the authority of God. So these four guys get together, and when we studied that passage, for those of you that were here then, because that was a long time ago when we did the Gospel of Mark, but if you'll remember right, there's no indication that he went willingly with them. In other words, they were like, we need to get you over there to Jesus. It's like, no. So they said, you know what? You don't have a say in the aunt. So they just basically each grabbed a corner and off they went. See, this is what you and I need to do as believers, regardless of what the paralyzed individual wants. They need to be brought to Jesus. Pick up a dang corner and take them. There's great coordination in this. These four guys, whoever they are incredible individuals. Someday we're going to get to talk to them. And that's going to be really interesting. But they grab up the thing and they take them there. We know the story. The crowd is there. They can't get in. And they're like, oh, man. But these guys wouldn't be put off. And so they said, well, you know what? There's stairs around the back. Let's go over there. And so these guys walk this dude around, carry him up the stairs in the sheet. Now, if they follow proper medical emergency procedures, they would have taken him up head first. I got a feeling these guys didn't care. This guy's going up down. Hey, you guys, help. Don't drop me. Oh, can you just imagine this? And they get him up on the top. And then what do? This isn't their house. They start digging through the dang roof. They're digging a hole in the roof. Now, you know, this all sounds really cool, but imagine that, what that means to the people that are inside under the roof. All of this stuff, can you just see Jesus just going, what the heck is... No, he knew exactly what's going on. But you can just see this stuff falling all around. Can't you? And all of a sudden, sunlight flashes through, and the next thing you see is this dude coming down on a mat. That's a pretty good possibility this guy wasn't my size. Okay? Probably not. Would have taken like 8 or 12 guys to do. But anyway, but in this case, they're lowering him down. Now, like I said, these guys had obviously practiced on carrying their friend before. You don't do something like this, walk up on top of a thing and lower somebody down. Remember the story. This is amazing. And they lowered him down. And Jesus doesn't respond to the faith of the guy on the mat. He responds to the faith of the friend standing up on the roof. And as they lowered him down, Jesus said these exact same words, arise. But there, take up your bed. Here, it's make your bed, because this guy's in his home. The guy in Mark 2 wasn't. But Jesus had said, arise, take up your bed, and go home. There's three commands within that. I can't imagine that Peter wasn't just going, oh my gosh, this is exactly what he did. Can you imagine what that must have been like? I can imagine as he gets there and he sees this, and now Jesus, you know, Jesus is healing. He obviously knows that. And he gets to the point and he's looking down at this guy, and you can see him in his mind. Oh my gosh, I remember an incident very similar to this. Can you imagine him just going, oh, thinking in his mind, what was it he said? How did he do it? What did he do? You know, you could just see the wheels turning, can't you? Because you know what? That's what you and I would do. You know? What did he say? How did he do it? Oh my gosh. Whatever the case may be. And it's like, oh, I remember. Arise, make your bed. Jesus Christ heals you. Arise, make your bed. And then he arose immediately. You can just see this event. You got a feeling that Peter just went, whoa. Wasn't expecting that, you know? I mean, even though you have the faith and you know God will do something like this, this has got to blow your doors off, man, that God would use you in a position like this to just actually see the power of God, that God is using you like that pitcher to overflow you and his power runs out of you. Oh, man, that had to be staggering. And if you think it was staggering for Aeneas, there you go, Aeneas, imagine this guy's dozing off and this big dude walks in and goes, the Lord is healing you. And I love how he says, Jesus the Christ. Make no mistake who this is. This is the Jesus, yeah, that Jesus, and he's the Christ. He's the Messiah, see. And all of a sudden, you're Aeneas and you just sort of open your eyes and there's this big dude and he's saying this and he's telling you to get up. Now, it's interesting at this point. We never read about this because I can't imagine anybody wanting to. But oftentimes, the Lord does the same thing to you and I, because whether we like to admit it or not, we're paralyzed in our faith. Are we not? Of course we are. And we're paralyzed because we've done something really dumb, which has led to an accident, and it has paralyzed us in our faith. And sometimes, it can paralyze us for a very long time. This is 8 years. And we'll lay there and we'll lay there. And then the Lord comes and sends somebody and says, you know what? Man the crud up and stand up. Right? I mean, that's really what's happening here, ultimately. Now, we never, the people that are healed don't do this. But in a spiritual sense, do you know the tragedy in this is? We've been in that position, as I've already said. And oftentimes we're just going to say, well, you know what? I'd really like to, but. And we just continue to lay on the mat, knowing full well that there's restoration possible if we just reach out and take it. But whether we've become comfortable in being paralyzed, or whether we're uncertain about not being paralyzed any longer, or just plain lack of faith, we have a tendency to like just laying on the mat. So you know what God will do? He'll send another Peter in. This one will probably be bigger and badder. You guys seen that commercial where the parents go to, you, when you're not really you is the commercial? When you're sort of you, I think is what it is. And those two parents go to the school, to the teacher. Have you seen that? He's the substitute teacher. And he's this big old buffed out biker dude. And they're like, well, you're not the teacher. Well, I'm sort of the teacher. The guy says, he's got this really mean look on his face. And he goes, and yeah, they sent me to basically enforce things. And he puts a pencil and he goes, boom, smashes the pencil down. And they get up and they go, oh, okay, we're going. He goes, sit down. And they sit down. And he's talking, the parents are talking to him like this. And then the father looks at the mom and he goes, did we ever get the question answered? Because I think I passed out from fear. Sometimes God will send those type of people into our lives. You better listen to them. Especially for those that are already his children. He don't want us laying around on a mat. He's got a job for you to do. It may not be a position in a church per se, but it's a position in the kingdom. So you need to get off the dang mat and quit whining and laying around and sniveling about it. Get up and do what God has asked you to do. That's what's happening here. Arise and make your bed. And I love this. Then he arose immediately. Now, immediately is pretty close, but it literally means instantaneously. It was bam. There it was. Jesus is healing you, so get up. Up the dude goes. Now we saw this, remember, with the guy outside of the temple before. I mean, these things are absolutely astonishing. Oh, well, that was for another time. No, it's not. God is still doing this. Sadly, most of these types of things has to happen to the people of God because we've gotten comfortable with being paralyzed, sad, or being deformed in our feet and not being able to walk in our faith. And so we find ourselves sitting outside the temple like that guy was. Never actually. We know what's going on in there. We really like to be a part of it. But we've crippled ourselves for whatever reason. Sad. Really, really sad. So he arose immediately. So all who dwelt at Lydda and Sharon saw him and turned to the Lord. You think? They all know who this guy was. You know, these were not big towns. This wasn't Jerusalem. Okay? This was not that big of a town. So everybody knows who this guy is. Everybody probably knows what's happened to him. Everybody knows his circumstances. And all of a sudden, the Lord sends one of his people in there and everything is turned on its ear. Now, there's no statement in this passage that Aeneas becomes a believer. However, that last phrase, so all who dwelt at Lydda and Sharon saw him, means that he was probably, not probably, well, we have to say probably because it's not identified clearly, that he's probably now living in the newfound faith and freedom from the suffering that he had been in the Lord. So all who dwelt at Lydda and Sharon saw him and they turned to the Lord. Now read that, saw him, repented, and came to the Lord, because that's literally what it says. No doubt many of those Hellenistic Jews, like probably Aeneas himself, had doubted the testimony of Jesus. Because make no mistake about it, what was going on in Jerusalem had gone a few short miles to get to Lydda. Everybody knew. Word traveled just as fast, well, not as fast, but very fast in those days, just by foot. Okay, so everybody knew. So it appears that there had been doubt, much probably like Saul, as to, well, we're hearing this stuff coming out of there, what these people are doing in the name of this guy, Jesus. But, you know, I mean, come on. You know, everybody likes to fluff it up a little bit, you know. So whatever the reason, they repented, and that means then they, of course, received a new life in the Lord. But incredible, the testimony of one who was paralyzed and jumps up and goes about what the Lord has asked him to do, both in the physical, but I would submit to you in the spiritual as well. Okay? So Clearly, this is tying back to the incident in Mark chapter 2 when the dude's lowering the guy through the roof. Okay? Well, now there's another story. Now, while Peter is in Lydda, is what's happening here. While Peter is there, it's about 10 miles from Lydda to get to the coastal city of Joppa. You're kind of heading northwest, like this. Well, for you guys, it would be, which side is west for you guys? This way? This way. Okay, so he's going like this. Okay, so he's in Jerusalem, he stops in Lydda, and now he's going up to Joppa. Actually, is what the way you pronounce it, but we call it Joppa. We get to the coastal city, or that's where he's actually headed. So now, where there's a report that's come down about something that's happening in this place called Joppa. And there was a Joppa while Peter is still in Lydda now. You're going to see why here in just a minute. At Joppa, there was a certain disciple named Tabitha. That's her Hebrew name, which is translated Dorcas. Okay? She's the first dork in the scripture. No. With the feminine dork, Dorcas. You know? No. Pretty clever, huh? I worked on that all week. But one name is her Hebrew name. The other is her Greek name, or actually Aramaic, because remember, Hebrew and Aramaic was very similar. So but both of them mean gazelle. She's an antelope. Whoopee! You know, swinging through the, you know, you get the idea. And it's not uncommon in those days, even today, to name, you know, daughters in particular after some beautiful, graceful animal. And that's what her name was. You know, freedom and just the beauty that comes from these things. So that's what her name was. Well, notice, though, that her name was, again, this graceful, beautiful animal. Well, geez, it seems to fit. Look at this. This woman was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. If you were Belizean, you would say, she's full up, boy. She's full. She's filled up. I mean, everything that comes out of this woman's life and everything she does and everything she says has as its root the word of God and the love of the brethren. I mean, she's full. There's no room for anything else. Everything in her life is focused on the Lord. She was full of good works and charitable deeds, which she did. She was constantly at this stuff. This wasn't a come and go thing. Now, we're not told here, but later we're going to see that it appears that Tabitha is also a Hellenistic Jew, but that she's also a widow. So it appears that she's a lady in her latter years. Although to be a widow doesn't mean you have to be in the latter years. But we're going to see why here in just a few minutes. Okay? So she was doing all of these things. Verse 37, but here she is, full of life, full of ministry, full of love for the Lord. You know, doing all the things that she's supposed to do in a relationship with who God was. Now, where did she get faith from? Probably from Philip. When Philip had gone out just a couple of years earlier and preached the gospel after his interview with the Ethiopian eunuch. See? There's much that's happening in Joppa. And these people are growing. By the way, that's the city of Jaffa in our day. Okay? That's so you know. And I don't want to get into the Hebrew that because it's not necessary. But anyway. But it happened in those days that she became sick and she died. Well, wait a minute. We see people on the TV all the time saying that if you have faith, you never get sick. You certainly don't die. Isn't that what they teach? Yes, that's exactly what they teach. We fought this in Belize. Oh, brother, you don't have faith if you got a cold. Oh, brother, you know, blah, blah, blah. I just looked at him and I said, well, then, boy, you better get that medicine off your nose called glasses. And you better get that thing hanging over your belt because it happens to all of us. And your hair ain't as thick as it once was. So easy thing to say, but what a dumb thing to say. Here's a woman we just read is absolutely full of deeds, of good things and kindness and compassion towards her fellow brethren and sisters. She's full, but she gets sick and she dies. So much for that theory. Health, wealth, and prosperity, tell that to these people. Tell it to them. Tell it to the rest of the church throughout the world. Easy to say on American TV. Not so easy to say in the slums of Gethsemane in Nairobi, Kenya. Ask Ed and Kelly. And yet the church is thriving there, just thriving. Man, oh, those people have no faith because those are the conditions they live in, and their children are dying because of the disease and stuff. And they pray, and the Lord heals. He answers, but he doesn't always. He's got a plan. He's got a purpose, and you're not changing that. Those people don't have faith? Please. That just drives me insane. Anyway, so she died, okay? Now, this is really unusual because remember, these are Jews. Even though they're Hellenistic Jews, they're Jews. In the Jewish faith, in the Jewish religion, when a person died, you washed them and then you wrapped them and you immediately buried them. You didn't leave them around because the law had said you cannot come in contact with a dead body. Otherwise, you make yourself ceremonially unclean. But look at what they're doing. But it happened in those days that she became sick and died, and when they had washed her, they laid her in an upper room. What? They took this dead woman and put her in this room. Notice they didn't wrap her. They just washed her, and they took her, and they laid her. They're completely outside of Judaism here. For what they're doing here, they're not going to be able to set foot in a synagogue for quite some time. After many washings and many days of purification, and then having a rabbi oversee the fact that they've actually gone through the ritual cleansing to be able to be allowed back into the synagogue. These people are taking this dead woman's body and they're putting it in a room. They've just completely annihilated the law. Interesting. Why? What had led them to the point to where they would break tradition like this? But we're talking serious break of tradition. We're going to see Peter does this at the end of chapter 9, and certainly in chapter 10. Okay? But notice, and since Lydda was near Joppa, and the disciples heard that Peter was there. Oh, Tabitha has died. Wait a second, I heard Peter was 10 miles away. Peter's here? Yeah, Peter's around here. And he's... You know, the Lord has done amazing things in Peter. Do you think maybe? Oh, yeah, I think maybe. We don't want to bury her yet. You see what's happening here? We look through all of the stuff in the book of Acts, these incredible things, and there's many amazing things. But to me, this is one of the keys to what's going on here. This particular thing, because Luke is moving us towards that massive transition that takes place in chapter 10. But he's doing it as this is all happening, and there's a moving away from Judaism. So they heard that Peter was there, and they sent two men to him. Now these guys probably beat feet across that road. It's only 10 miles, so it's not that far. And certainly Peter's reputation had preceded him. Not that Peter had any authority. He had made that abundantly clear that nothing that he did for the guy on the steps of the temple. We'd already seen that and getting broke out of prison a couple times. All of those things. Peter never took credit for this. So nobody could confuse the fact that it's Peter that has the authority. They just knew Peter knew Jesus, and that was enough. So we ain't going to bury Dorcas yet. We're not going to bury Tabitha yet. We're going to lay her in an upper room. Really? You think we should do that? Oh, yeah. And then we need to get two really fast guys to bolt and go over to Lydda and tell Peter to get the crud over here. So notice, and they implored him not to delay. Don't wait, Peter. She's dead. Remember, there was a period of waiting for Lazarus, Mary and Martha's brother, a period of 4 days. And when Jesus said, no, it's okay. I'm here. Everything's going to be fine. And they looked at him and they said, but Lord, he's been dead for 4 days. He reeketh. I love the King James. You got to say reeketh. I mean, that is really cool. Reeketh. I mean, he reeks. By now, 4 days into this thing, oh my gosh. If you've ever been in a third world culture, you've seen this. We saw this in Belize. They take the bodies in that humidity of the rainforest and they lay them in the bedroom. And we got invited we were just there, hadn't been there a year yet. The lady's name was Hortense and her husband had actually been murdered. But they had him there. We had this big thing of the family outside this little tiny house. If you've been there, you know what we're talking about. And this guy's in this bedroom in Belize. Well, things happen to the body. We're in church, so we'll just leave that at that. that are not good. And so he'd already been there a couple of days because they wait a few days before they actually, you know, have the sort of the celebration thing for the person and all that. So we go to the house. Never in my wildest dreams did I expect to get asked to go in and pray over a guy that's been dead for 4 days. Although I read it in the scripture, the smell itself, I couldn't think clearly. Let me just tell you. He didn't look so good. Okay? It was obvious he was dead. He's a goner. Now, could the Lord restore him? Of course he could. I wasn't moved by that, but that's what happens. It happens all over the world. But it doesn't happen in Israel. It doesn't happen to Jews especially. So they had laid her up there and they said, listen, you can't wait. We need you to come. Okay? Surely they were telling him what's going on. Then, now Peter had just gotten Aeneas up, right? Now Peter arises, doesn't delay, and he went with them. Can't you imagine Peter on this 10-mile journey just going, holy smokes, Lord. I remember what you did that day in Capernaum with the guy coming through the roof. And I used the words there. And now these guys are coming and telling me to do the same thing. This is exactly what happened with Jairus' daughter. You got to see Peter just rolling this around in his head. Oh, my gosh. Here's another opportunity. The same day. She was dying, or died, roughly within a day or two of Aeneas's getting set free from paralysis. I mean, this is unbelievable. Yeah, it just so happened. Really? No, God is orchestrating this. He's speaking louder than any of his followers could ever do. So Peter arose and he went with them. And when he had come, they brought him to the upper room. And all the widows stood by him weeping. Now, this is different right here than Jairus' daughter, the little 12-year-old girl. Remember that story, okay? He had been approached by the leader of the synagogue in Capernaum and had said, come, my daughter is dying. And Jesus, having come from across the Sea of Galilee in Gadara, had come across, and he was walking with the man going through the streets, and all of the big crowds were there, and everybody was there. And just so happens that there was a woman who had a hemorrhage, okay, for 12 years. And she had heard that he was coming. So he's going through the streets and she hears this and she knows she's going to be ridiculed, she's going to be humiliated, she's going to be ostracized because she cannot be around people according to Jewish law. She's unclean. And nevertheless, her need is heavier than her humility. And we find her going through the streets and she knows and she has heard of him and she said, if I can just touch his robe. And we know the story. There's immediate healing. And then Jesus said, who touched me? Now, get out of your mind the fact that Jesus went, somebody touched me. Who touched me? Please. He's Jesus, for goodness sake. He knew exactly what was happening. He didn't say that for him because after she touched this and she realized that she was healed, she basically freaked out. And she kind of slides back into the crowd. Jesus is saying, no, 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 no. Who touched me? See, step out now. Step out. And of course, we know the situation. Well, Jairus is there just going, oh, that's really cool, Lord, but my daughter, my daughter. And we read that the minute that happened with this woman, the servant showed up and said, Master, never mind. Or don't bring the master. She's already dead. Oh, if we'd have just got there, if this woman hadn't been here. Oh, if. Can you just see it? And Jesus looks at him and said, dude, just believe. And everything's going to be fine. And then they left and they go into the room. Well, there was weeping. Those were hired mourners. People were hired in those days. Ladies, you can get a job weeping at funerals. Okay? You have to learn to go like that, but you get hired. Okay? And they would pay these people to stand outside and do the whole thing, cry out and stuff, blah, blah, blah. So with the daughter, Jairus, the little girl, there's the hired. These ladies aren't hired. Did you catch that? They brought him to the upper room and all the widows stood by him weeping. These are not hired. These are people who were deeply sorrowful and deeply, you know, just they didn't know this lady had been so significant in their lives. This was the natural outpouring of emotion here, unlike Jairus' daughter. They stood by him weeping. Notice how we also know that. Showing the tunics and the garments. Notice her name now was Dorcas. So now it's switched to the Greek. It's interesting to make sure Luke's telling everybody. So, you know, we're talking about the same person here. Showing the tunics and the garments which Dorcas had made while she was with them. Now, don't think that they pulled everything off the shelf. Okay? She's in the upper room. The business, obviously, this is what she did to minister to the poor. This was her Calvary downtown outreach, so to speak, in clothes, and no doubt about it, food. No, they were in the upper room. So they were saying, look at what she made. Do you see? Do you see the difference? The tunics is the undergarment. Look, they roll up the sleeve, the undergarment. This is what she made, and then this, you know, the garment, the outside covering. These are the things that she did. Now, of all things, why are they showing Peter this? Why aren't they saying she was such a good woman? Because you know what? Her actions spoke louder than her words. In other words, we have these because of her, Peter. Showing the tunics and garments he had made. But Peter put them all out. That's wonderful, ladies, but I need to pray. Step outside, okay? Whereas Jesus put out the people in the Jairus' daughter incident. Here, he's asking them to step apart. Notice what happens. But Peter put them all out and he knelt down and prayed. Totally different than what happened with Aeneas. Different. Because there's a different level here. This lady's dead. She's dead. Okay? And turning to the body, he said, notice after he prays. The kneeling part isn't that significant. God hears your prayers whether you're standing, driving in the car. However, if you're driving the car, try not to pray with your eyes shut. Okay? Everybody thinks to pray, we have to shut our eyes. Domino Patre, kind of thing. You know? No, you can pray with your eyes wide open. Okay? The Lord hears. That's all prayer is. He kneels down and he prays. It's the prayer, not the position. It's the condition of the heart that God is interesting. And turning to the notice that this case, it's a body. There's no spirit, there's no soul in this shell. This is the earth suit in the horizontal position. And that's all it will ever be, just like Adam's was before God breathed spirit, breathed his life into his lungs. And he became a nephesh, a living spirit. This is just the body now, it's just the shell. And turning to the body, he said, and again, can't you just see him going, oh, what did he say to that little girl that day? Oh my gosh. Oh yeah, I remember. Now there, it was Talitha Kum, which in the Aramaic means little girl, get up. The same, we looked at it when we talked about that, because this is in Luke 8. The same thing that what happened there was that phrase that Jesus used was the same thing the mothers would say to the little girls waking them up in the morning. That's what Jesus did. But this is a little different. So she has a name. We're not told a little girl's name. It's a little girl. And turning to the body, he said, Tabitha, arise. Once again, I love this. And she opened her eyes. Now, if I'd have been Peter, I'd have fallen off the stool and just going, Lord, I can't do this anymore. This is too much. Holy cow. You're blowing me away. I mean, we're talking major, major incidents for this guy in a very short period of time. And she opened her eyes. Boop! Holy cow. Can you imagine? It's like you punch her in the cheek. Are you really there? And when she saw Peter, she sat up. You know what's interesting about this to me? I was thinking about this. And I thought, you know what? When the little girl, when she was gone and had left her body, it was the Lord's voice that she heard. Little girl, arise. She hears Peter's voice. And she opens her eyes, not to see Jesus. She had just seen Jesus because she was dead. But now she's back and she sees Peter. I mean, think about this for a second. Whoa, I've got a hunch, no way to know this, that I'll bet that little girl and Tabitha did not want to come back. Did not want to, but probably in the brief time that was there, the Lord said, no, there's more for you to do. And little girl, oh, how do I have a plan for your life? Because though he was there with her in the house, he's God, he can do that kind of thing. He was talking to her in heaven too. See? Whoa, think about that. And I know he left apart his godhood. Okay, he's still God. Okay, you don't walk on water if you left your godhood behind in the fullest sense of the word. Anyway, so Peter put them all out and she opened her eyes. And when she saw Peter, she sat up. She would have heard Peter's. I would have sat up and said, dude, seriously, man? Do you know how cool it was there? What are you thinking? You just called me from the beach to Mesquite. What the heck? Don't do that. Can I go back? No, she doesn't say that. She opened up her eyes and noticed this, and he gave her his hand just like Jesus did. He's doing everything that his Lord had done. Oh, good grief, why don't we learn? He speaks to her in that condition. He reaches out his hand. He gave her his hand and he lifted her up. And when he had called the saints, he presented her alive. Well, I bet that was a reentry, you know, just like in Jairus' day. But do you see what's happening here? This is amazing, but there's a major shift taking place, and obviously Peter is going to play a pivotal role. Now, what's interesting, not only about Aeneas and Lydda, but now Tabitha in Joppa, who remembers what else happened in Joppa a long, long time before this incident that was concerning the resurrection? Anybody? This is where Jonah got on the boat that led to the, okay? You know, like Pinocchio and what's that dude's name? You know, building a fire inside the whale. Geppetto, there you go. Thank you. Yeah, kind of like that. No, that's the same place that that happened. And interestingly enough, when the Jews cried out, just show us a sign, Jesus said there's not going to be a single sign given to this generation except the sign of Jonah. Whoa, the resurrection. It's always about the resurrection because the resurrection is always about the covenant. Absolutely. So this is stunning what's going on here. Notice he called the saints, those that had been separated from the world. But notice there's another group here, the widows. And this is probably the widows that were before that. At that juncture when they were telling Peter, you need to bring her back, look what she's done. It implies that they, at least some of them, were not believers at the time. How cool is that? I bet you they're believers now. So again, how many times have we been serving the Lord and we end up spiritually dead? And we've heard the voice of one of the Lord's servants saying, arise, get up, be about your business. But we've decided, you know what, kind of like it here. I like the dead feeling. I'm going to stay here. And then lastly, and it became known throughout all Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. The church continues to grow because the church's Lord is none other than Jesus Christ, who had said, I will build my church. Not Peter, not James, not John, not Paul, not you, not me. I will build my church. Many believed on the Lord. So it was that he, of course, that is Peter, he stayed many days in Joppa with Simon. What does it say? A tanner. Now, this isn't the guy that owns the first tanning booths recorded in history. Okay? That's not what's being described here. Simon is a tanner. They were guys that took skins from animals. They treated them and stuff and made them into leather and they made them into other things like that. However, if you were that person, what are you coming in contact with? Dead animals. Hard to get skin off a walking around animal. Won't stand still. So these guys were hated by the Jews. In fact, in their law that they added to the law, their laws that they added to the law, said if you're a tanner, A, you cannot have your shop any, you can't be closer than 50, it's not 50 miles. Anyway, you got to be outside the city. Okay? A, this kind of stenchy, but B, because you're unclean. And if you're a tanner, you have to tell, if you're going to get married, you got to tell your wife what you are before you marry her. Otherwise, if you marry her as a tanner pretending to be something else, and she finds out she's married to you and you're a tanner because you're ceremonial unclean, she can give you a letter of divorce. So these tanner people were not overly popular. Okay? Those purple lights were tough to come by in these days. But that's what's happening. So why is all that significant? Well, notice where Peter is staying. Okay? Now, guess, we know what's going to happen, what's going to lead Peter to the Cornelius in the next chapter. Guess whose roof Peter was staying on when he saw the sheet come down out of heaven? Oh, he's staying in an unclean man's house, dreaming about unclean things. There's a major transition taking place. So what is all of this about? Folks, you and I are Peter. And God is going to cross our paths, make no mistake about it, whether you like it or not, whether you don't believe it or not, is irrelevant. And you're going to cross paths with those who are spiritually, in their spiritual life, are absolutely paralyzed. Now, you don't got to be rough and smack them around and stuff, though sometimes it's necessary. But sometimes you just say, you know what, Jesus is healing you, get over it, get up, and get about the business. But there are going to be other times when you're going to cross paths with those who you're absolutely certain, and they may be absolutely certain, that spiritually they are flat dead. Okay? The same thing applies. After you kneel and you pray, the Lord may just say to you, go and speak. The issue is, what are you going to do? Because there are Tabithas and Ennius's in all of our lives every day. Some of us have been these two people. Some of us are still these two people. But regardless of what condition you are in, the Lord's call is sufficient to change your life. All you got to do is allow Him to do it. Amen? Amen? All right, let's stand and close in a word of prayer.